This Tuesday is Valentine's Day, and hearts, flowers, chocolates, cards, candy, and Cupid, the Roman god of erotic love, often come to mind. And maybe you've seen this meme that's been going around when you realize Valentine's Day falls on a Tuesday, and it's a heart made out of tacos. I'd be happy to receive that. All right, just a bit of trivia. An estimated 1 billion Valentine's Day cards are either sent or exchanged each year. Think of all the ones that school children exchange, which makes Valentine's Day the second largest card-giving holiday of the year behind Christmas. And I read that school teachers, they're the ones who receive the most Valentines. Well, the day is named after one or more early Christian martyrs named Valentine. And the truth behind the various Valentine legends is pretty murky, it's pretty ambiguous. See, one legend says that Valentine was a minister who lived during the 3rd century in Rome. And Emperor Claudius II, well, he decided that single men made better soldiers than those with wives and families. And so he outlawed marriage for his potential soldiers. Well, Valentine, disagreeing with the decree, he defied Claudius and continued to perform marriages for young lovers in secret. When Valentine's actions were discovered, Claudius ordered that he be arrested and put to death. Well, according to another legend, Valentine sent the first Valentine greeting himself. While in prison, it's believed that Valentine fell in love with this young lady and who may have been the jailer's daughter, who visited him during his confinement. Well, before his death, it's said that he wrote her a letter which he signed, "From Your Valentine." And some believe that Valentine's Day is celebrated in the middle of February to commemorate the anniversary of Valentine's death, but others believe that they decided to celebrate Valentine's Day in the middle of February in an effort to Christianize the pagan Lupercalia festival, the celebrations of that. And supposedly one of the rituals was all of the young women in the city would put their names in a large urn. And then the bachelors, the city's bachelors, would choose a name out of the urn, and they become paired with that woman for the year. And those matches, they often ended in marriage. Well, the main symbol or decoration for this day is the heart. And of course, it's referring to someone who has a heart filled with romantic love. But today, we're going to be talking about having a different kind of heart. Well, a few days ago, I was watching a superhero movie that came out in 2022, last year. It's really an anti-hero movie called Black Adam. It's not too bad, you know, it just has some language. But at one point, all right, he's flying around and he's killing all of the bad guys. And it's playing the Rolling Stones song, Painted Black, which has a catchy tune, at least in my opinion. But it has pretty depressing lyrics. And there are a number of different ideas on the meaning. Anyway, the song says, "I look inside myself and see my heart is black." So, how does that happen spiritually? Well, it often happens from living in this sinful world and hanging out with worldly people and listening to Satan and giving in to our temptations and filling our hearts and minds with negative or sinful things. Our hearts, well, they can end up full of hate and hypocrisy and selfishness and coveting and lust and so forth. But that's not what God wants for us. Jesus came along before the Rolling Stones and said, "Blessed are the pure in heart." Or if you would, be turning back to the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5. All right, let's just get a little bit of background. Now again, the chapter starts by saying, when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on the mountain, and after he sat down, of course, the typical posture of a rabbi, his disciples came to him. He opened his mouth and began to teach them. Now keep in mind, mountains over there are what we would call hills. And as I mentioned, there are some different ideas on where Jesus gave this sermon. And one popular idea is a hill north of the Sea of Galilee that's, well, it's known today as the Mount of Beatitudes. And in 1938, they built a chapel on it called the Church of the Beatitudes. And part of the building is designed as an octagon to commemorate the eight Beatitudes. And there's a stained glass window for each one written in Latin. Now, here's something to think about. This sermon is so deep and so profound that it only takes about 10 to 15 minutes to read it in its entirety. And yet, you'll notice how I've done a 30-minute sermon on each of the Beatitudes, the introduction. Well, one thing that jumps out is how Jesus talked a lot in this sermon about having a heart obedience and not just a legalistic obedience. So, why is that important? Well, think about it in this way. If you're driving past the school and the children are out, well, the speed limit, of course, is normally 20 miles per hour. That seems very slow. Why would you go that speed? Not just because there's a sign with a blinking light, but because you know there's a cop who likes to hide out right over there. On the other hand, if you love children and you see them getting out of school and playing around and things like that, what are you going to do? You are going to slow way down, and you don't need that sign or that cop. It's about our motivation. You see, when it's simply a legalistic motivation, if that sign and that cop, if they're not there, you are not going to slow down. That's why heart obedience is much more valuable to God. Are we doing what we were doing simply to avoid punishment? Or because we love God and want to please Him and love our fellow man and want to do what's best for him? I'm sure you can see the difference. So with that in mind, let's look at our next beatitude. Last week was the merciful. This week it's the pure in heart. Verse 8, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Purity is pretty important to us in this culture. We often talk about getting rid of pollution so we can have pure air and water. And how many products do we have for sale that boast of having nothing added or boast of being 100% pure? I did a search. I was amazed at how many companies and products actually have the word pure in their names, even when their ingredients lists clearly show that they are not. But Jesus, of course, is talking about a different kind of purity. Psalm 24, the psalmist asked, who may ascend into the hill of the Lord, and who may stand in his holy place? He who has clean hands and a pure heart. Well, the heart is obviously not referring to our blood pump there. Okay, it's speaking of the inner person, our thinking and our decisions and our affections. And so these are people who are pure inwardly, not just pure in actions, which is important, but pure in heart. See, Christianity is something that's supposed to affect us from the inside out. Our culture puts a great deal of emphasis on the importance of how you look on the outside. Oh, we spend an incredible amount of money and time on how we look. You know, and many people idolize the beautiful and attractive. And well, as you know, I've got two daughters, and I'm always trying to teach them that, yes, it's nice to look good on the outside, and we're supposed to take care of ourselves, but it's much more important to look good on the inside. Now, there are a few different Greek words for pure. This one is often speaking of being clean, in contrast to a dirty or stained garment or a murky river. It also has the sense of being unmixed, as in pure gold, where there are no foreign elements. In our hearts, we're to be unmixed. We're to be sincere, honest, and without hypocrisy. No hidden motives. Sadly, for some people, even their benevolence is not true altruism. There's always an angle, what they can get out of it. See, some people act as they do simply to use and to manipulate others. They're not true blue or fair dinkum, as they say in Australia, my wife's country. Politicians often have a problem with that. There are plenty of hypocrites out there wearing masks, but disciples of Christ are to have singleness of heart. We're to be sincere and true. God doesn't just care about what you do, but also why you do it. Now, it's interesting to me that when we read the Gospels, we find that the sin Christ attacked most harshly was not adultery, lying, stealing, or anything like that, but hypocrisy. Jesus had very serious words for those who were engaging in hypocrisy, especially the religious leaders. See, his most stinging rebukes were to the scribes and the Pharisees. 7 times in Matthew 23, he called them hypocrites and said things like, "Even so, you too outwardly appear righteous to men, but inwardly you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites." The word hypocrisy, well, it originated in the Greek language as a theatrical term. So the Greek word hypokrites, it was used for a stage actor. And the Greek and Roman actors, they would often wear a mask to hide their true identity. Well, an actor, they could even play multiple roles because he could wear a mask and he could play a role saying or doing certain things. But then he could go backstage and he could get another mask, come back with a different mask, and he'd play a different role saying and doing very different things. And so a hypocrite is an actor pretending to be something he or she is not, putting on a false face. The dictionaries define hypocrisy as the practice of professing beliefs, feelings, or virtues that one does not hold or possess. The condition of a person pretending to be something he is not. Now, I have a friend who grew up in a missionary family in South America, and he said that his mom would sometimes get these things that were breaded and shaped like fish. The thing was, they were actually made out of chicken, and so she called them hypocrites. "We're having hypocrites for dinner tonight." That's pretty good. When it came to the Pharisees, their religion was often outward and artificial. Oh, they sure made it look good on the outside. But the religious display and the outward ritual cleansing, that's not really what God is after. Jesus said that they were like a used cup or a dish that's just cleaned on the outside, or like a whitewashed tomb that, oh, it sure looked nice on the outside, but inside it's full of dead men's bones. Like the Pharisees, you can be the most holy-looking person in the world, but still have an unclean heart. Well, in passage after passage, both Old Testament and New, we can see that God is after our hearts. For example, Matthew 15, Jesus applied a passage from Isaiah that says, "This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far away from me." And you may remember Samuel being sent to anoint a new king in 1 Samuel chapter 16. When they entered, he looked at Eliab and thought, "Surely the Lord's anointed is before him." But the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For God sees not as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." As Jesus said to the Pharisees in Luke 16, 15, "You are those who justify yourselves in the sight of men, but God knows your hearts. For that which is highly esteemed among men is detestable in the sight of God. Men consider them high and holy, but only men." It seems that the more they managed to get exaltation from men, well, the more abominable they made themselves before God. See, the problem is, it's what God thinks that really counts. Well, later in the Sermon on the Mount, right, at the beginning of chapter 6, Jesus, he talked about this in regard to almsgiving, prayer, and fasting. Those are things were considered by the Jews to be the most pious, the most righteous activities one could engage in. You can do the most righteous things for the wrong reasons. Preaching, teaching, leading prayer, song leading, cleaning the church building, hosting a church event, visiting those in the hospital, card writing, friends speak, day school, inviting the preacher over for barbecue. That one's at the top. Whatever. Is this real, or are we just play acting? You know, is our heart in it, or is it just vain repetition or even a show? We can fool each other. That's not difficult. But God knows if we are hypocrites. Or he knows if our hearts are mixed with the world, and we are double-minded. James 4:8, it says, "Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded." Now, double-minded is literally two-souled in the Greek. And I believe that it refers to a person essentially living two different lives. See, it's a person who's got one foot in the church and one foot in the world. Sometimes they trust in God, and sometimes they trust in the world. Sometimes they put God as a priority, other times they put the world as a priority. See, this person goes to God, but the world keeps luring him or her back. Chapter 1, verse 7, James said that such a man is unstable in all his ways. He's wishy-washy, tossed to and fro because of his dual allegiance. You remember Matthew 6:24, Jesus said that no one can serve two masters. We've got to make a choice of allegiance. Okay, the result? For they shall see God. We might think of it like trying to look through a filthy window. You're not going to be able to see what's on the other side, at least not properly. Those who are not pure in heart will not see God in nature, in the Bible, or anywhere else. And they certainly won't see him working in their lives. See, many of them, they already have their minds made up about God, and they're not honest about the evidence or themselves. They won't see God here, and they certainly won't be happy to see God on the judgment day. I think Sellers Crane did a good job of putting it all together. In this context, the verb see goes beyond viewing with the eyes. It means to experience, enjoy, and know God. It is true that no one has ever seen God, and he gives a list of passages. There is a sense, however, in which Christians experience God in the present through the eyes of faith, even without physically seeing him. Nevertheless, someday that faith will become sight, and Christians will see him face to face. In the heavenly city, God will dwell among his people, Revelation 21:3, and they will see his face, 22:4. And so it's not just seeing God in heaven, but it could also be referring to experiencing God now and knowing that he's with you and working in your life. You can see it. And as a side, there's also the point that C.S. Lewis made. I believe in Christianity as I believe that the sun has risen. Not only because I see it, but because by it, I see everything else. It enlightens everything so we can see it properly. So, okay, how can we clean up the heart? That's an important question to ask. Because obviously Jesus wouldn't have said that unless we could do something about it. I think first, it has to start with a desire. Do I really want to have a pure heart? Because there are times when we say we want something, but we really don't. Secretly, deep down inside, we're comfortable with the way things are. And I sometimes think of the man at the pool of Bethesda in John chapter 5. Jesus' question there in verse 6, it's always intrigued me. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had already been a long time in that condition, he said to him, "Do you wish to get well?" And our first reaction might be to say, well, duh. But that's not necessarily the case. People can get comfortable with just about any situation. And I think some people actually enjoy being an object of pity and having others always wait on them. And if they're sick, well, they don't have to go to work. But you know, the same question could be asked by Jesus when it comes to things like getting rid of sin in cleaning up our hearts. Do you really want a pure heart? How bad? All right, second, we need to pray and ask for God's help. I think that we should pray like David in Psalm 51:10. Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. In Ezekiel 36:26, when talking about them coming back from the Babylonian captivity, God said, I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit within you. And I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. And so we need to pray, God, I don't want this dirty, black, divided heart anymore. Please help me. Now, how he might do that, I have no idea. It may be direct or indirect. He may send people or situations into our lives that can help. But I do think we need to ask and then accept his help. And third, we need to actively do things that will affect our hearts. Reading the Bible is a big one, but also frequent prayer. Making it to Bible class in the worship assembly, Christian fellowship, Bible camp, gospel meetings, and controlling the avenues into our minds. We have to be very careful about what we see, hear, and read. Movies, TV, internet, books, music, even the company we keep. 1 Corinthians 15:33, do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. And whom you hang out with is going to have an effect. If we're giving our minds a diet of worldly wisdom and reasoning, worldly values and ethics, how can we expect to be anything other than worldly? If nothing else, you might want to try VidAngel when streaming your movies and your shows to filter out the bad stuff. That's what my family does. Anyway, I think those three things will certainly help. Now, sometimes a congregation will see a problem. And so they'll preach or they'll teach on the importance of coming to worship or giving or living a certain way or whatever. And, you know, things get a little better for a short amount of time, but then they just go right back to the way they were. Why? Because it's most likely a heart problem. The thing is, if we only try to deal with the symptoms, it usually doesn't fix the problem. It's like having a serious toothache, but instead of going to the dentist to have it dealt with, you just keep taking pain medication. Or here's an example I've heard before. You know, if you walk into your kitchen in the morning and you see a puddle on the floor, well, you probably have a leaky roof or maybe a leaky dog. But if you just mop up the puddle, did you fix the problem? Well, no. The next time it rains, you're going to have another puddle. You have to deal with the actual problem and fix the roof. If your car starts making a funny noise, it's like turning up the radio so you can't hear it anymore. Well, that's often true spiritually. The external problem is the result of something internal, something in the heart. And so if we only try to deal with a symptom, well, it usually doesn't fix the problem. We have to look at and work on our hearts. Some people like to use the illustration of changing the oil in your car, but you never change the oil filter. Eventually, the oil filter is going to get all clogged up, and it's going to cause a bunch of problems. Well, the same is true if we just try to change some of the outward behavior and we don't change our hearts. Our heart is kind of like that filter. The world might say, you just need to change your circumstances. Get a new job, get a new house, get a new spouse. The Pharisees, well, they might say, you just need to change your religious activities, and especially when other people are watching. But God would say that we need to work on and change our hearts. Why? Well, because like that oil filter, everything that flows from it will be clean. Everything is filtered through it. The outside will naturally follow the inside. Matthew 23:26. You blind Pharisees, first clean the inside of the cup and of the dish so that the outside of it may become clean also. In Mark 7, Jesus said, For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed the evil thoughts, fornications, thefts, murders, adulteries, deeds of coveting and wickedness, as well as deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, and foolishness. All these things proceed from within and defile the man. And that is why Proverbs 4:23 says, "Watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life." And so our challenge for this week is to first memorize this verse and then to work on those three things, those three steps to start cleaning up our hearts: desire, prayer, and activity. Okay, next week we're going to continue on and look at the peacemakers. Now again, these are certainly not easy. But the benefits of having these qualities, these attitudes to be what God wants us to be, outweighs anything this world has to offer or any persecution it might inflict. May God bless each of us as we strive to become a true disciple of His.